Okay, so I have taken it upon myself to introduce the first speaker. So the first speaker is probably the one person who doesn't need any introduction, but we'll do it anyway. It's Ilko Dolsa, the guy who started it all. I think may have been around 10 years ago that you wrote your PhD thesis on purely functional software management. And I think it's the dream of pretty much every PhD student that 10 years after submitting the thesis, there's a big conference with lots of attendees who want to, dying to talk about the work. So without much further ado, please welcome Ilko Dolsa and his keynote address.
All right. That sounds like it's working. I can hear myself. So yeah. So let me first start with the important thing. So welcome everybody, and thank you all for coming. And we missed a very important thank you, namely to the organizers. So Rock, Paulus, and Peter. So let's give them a big thanks for. For taking care of the organization, and so yeah, this is really impressive what you did here. We already had a thank you for the sponsor, so especially since I work for one of these, I won't ask for another applause. Okay, so in this talk, I'm going to do two things. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the state of the project and what we've been doing in the last 12 months. And then I'm going to talk about the roadmap, but I'm not good at the visionary stuff, so I'll just talk about some things that I think are important in the future, and then I'll open the floor to you guys to share your ideas on what's important. So I would like to have a sort of interactive thing. All right, so what has been going on? Well, we actually have a very nice, you could say, almost exponential growth. So this is a graph of the committers to the Nix packages repository. So as you can see, the first few years, there was not much happening. So I was writing my thesis, and basically Nix was a vehicle for writing papers, as these things go. And then so after 2010 or so, things really started to grow. So we're now at something like 160 individual committers per month. So it's quite a large and growing community. So let's see if we can keep the exponential growth going. Actually, it's already tapering off a little bit at the end, so maybe you should ignore the last bit. So this is the number of commits per day. So it's also quite large. There was actually a peak last year. I guess that was around the 14.12 release time frame. So I guess lots of people started stressing out and doing commits. So yeah, also quite a nice growth. Or perhaps here's a graph. Actually, the title is a misnomer. This isn't really the Nix packages size. It's the size of the Nix packages trunk job set on Hydra. So this is really how stressed our build farm is. So the Hydra, the Nix packages job set currently consists of 45,000 jobs. So if you're wondering why Hydra is always having a disk full, this is why. It has been having ups and downs. The downs are mostly every time our single Mac OS X build machine broke, and we disabled Darwin builds, you get a big drop. So, but this is not a very scientific number because there's a lot of double counting and so on. So perhaps more interesting is growth in users rather than developers. So I don't really have any measures of that because we don't have something like what's called the Debian installation count, or they have this thing where users can sort of register themselves. We don't have that, but we have the binary cache, which is, I guess, reasonable or is correlated to user growth. So this is since 2013 when we had the binary cache. So every time a Nix user installs something, it comes from cache.nixos.org. So we're now at some almost 100 gigabytes of traffic a day. So that has also been growing rather large, although Rob claims that this is mostly him downloading stuff from all his machines. The number of unique IPs per day. So we're now at something like 1600 per day. And I think we had a few hundred thousand unique IPs over the lifetime of the binary cache. So, I guess you could conclude from this that there are at least 1600 people a day, hitting the cache. So doing Nix or NixOS operations. So, all right, so that's some numbers on our progress. Oh, a few more. Oh, so we recently hit our 10,000 PR/issue on GitHub. So, and most of them are actually closed. So that's I guess a good sign. There are only 1,000 open. So that's should probably do something about that. But I guess that's not too bad. All right. So what has been happening in the last 12 months? So we've had two NixOS releases. I cannot possibly summarize what was in them. Thousands of new packages, services. We have a whole new Haskell framework. Big improvements to GNOME, KDE, and so on. One thing that I really should give a shout out is Vladimir here. This is so awesome. This is something we've wanted for years, and now we finally have it. I had to mention this because these slides are made with LaTeX using a Nix expression. So this is the Nix expression that builds these slides. And it used to be that, so I always stubbornly kept using TayTeX because it's a small, only 200 megabyte package or so, and not TechLive, which is this 2 or 3 gigabyte monstrosity, which you can't really use because if you want to build your slides, you would have to first download 3 gigabytes of crap, which is bad if you're in a hotel with a really bad internet connection. But now we have this really nice minimal thing, so you only have to download the stuff that you need. So I think this is really nice because it's an example of how Nix can sort of infiltrate other domains, because we now really have a better tech life than tech life. So, all right, I just wanted to give a shout out to that. So what has been happening in Nix? We have had 3 releases, lots of new features, a few that stand out. We have signed binary cache support, which is important for security. So, for instance, this allows us to serve cache.nixos.org or mirror it. And you don't have to trust the mirror. You only have to have the appropriate public key of cache.nixos.org. And this allows other people to set up caches. And as long as you have the right public keys in your installation, it all works fine. Automatic downloading of Nix expressions, I'll come back to that, but this basically is, I think, going to make Nix channel obsolete. So here you can now just say nixenv-f and then the URL to a tarball containing Nix expressions and install packages from there. And you can also put something like that in the nixpath environment variable. So, for instance, I use this on NixOS machines in order not to have to run Nix channel on those machines. You just set Nix, the Nix path environment to point to a tarball, like the 1509 current release, and then NixEnv just does the right thing. And a really big thing that has been happening is, well, the Mac OS X support in general. So in Nix, we have had sandbox support, but more importantly, in Nix packages, we've had major improvements to the packaging. In particular, we now have a pure standard environment, or almost pure, so it doesn't depend on stuff outside of Nix packages, apart from the C library, I guess, and a few other things. I think you no longer need to have Xcode installed to bootstrap or to build things. So this is another great thing. So there are a few, of course, still a few kinks, but once this works, I think really Nix and Nix packages has the potential of being better than homebrew for developers on Mac OS X who want to set up their environment. So another step to world domination. I've been doing some work myself on Hydra. So Hydra is really a big bottleneck to the project because. Well, Nix packages is really big. Nix OS is big. We had those 45 packages in the Nix packages job set, and then multiplied by all the branches we have, like the staging branch and the various release branches, feature branches. Hydra can't really keep up, and it has also various software problems. So these are being addressed. So part of it is already there. So we have a new Hydra queue runner that schedules builds much more efficiently. So it used to be the case that Hydra was really kind of stupid. So it had a queue of builds, and then it would sort of randomly select some builds and basically run a Nix build on each of them. But that meant that if all these builds depended on the same derivation, like rebuilding GCC, that the whole build farm would be doing only one thing, namely rebuilding GCC. So you'd have all those machines except one being idle. So that was really bad utilization. And now we have a much smarter queue runner that just looks at the entire queue, at the entire dependency graph of all the builds in the queues. And if there's any build steps that can run, it will run them. So that's a lot better. Another thing is a Hydra provisioner, so we can now dynamically scale the build farm up and down. So we can start EC2 spot instances to do builds. So for instance, if there are 10,000 Linux builds in the queue, then it will fire up a dozen spot instances to sort of quickly burn through the queue. The only sad thing about this is that we can't do this for Darwin. Because right now we have one Mac Mini doing all the Darwin builds. We need to do something about that. And there are some more improvements on the way, but I think I have another slide about that later on. All right, another thing that has been happening is that we have a NixOS Foundation now, which is a non-profit organization. I think the official description in the founding document was to support a purely functional deployment model, blah, blah, blah. So this was really intended as a vehicle to be able to handle donations. So for years, people have been asking, well, Hydra is so slow. Can I donate some money or some hardware? And we didn't really have a infrastructure to deal with that. So now we have a foundation, and more importantly, we have a bank account and a PayPal account. So, and a legal identity. So we can handle donations, and we can, use that, in the future to, for instance, buy, Hetzner hardware and to pay, Amazon costs, and to pay for conferences. That's very good. So maybe at some point in the future, the foundation could also do other things like handle copyright assignments. But I always get very bored thinking about that sort of thing. All right. So that was the past. Now the future, the roadmap. So I should say that roadmaps are fiction. So in my PhD thesis, there is actually a future work section, which is what academics do when they write a paper. There is the obligatory future work section, which describes all the things that you're actually not going to do, but you want to show the reviewers how clever you are and that you thought about these things, and you sort of claim them in case somebody else decides to do them. But number one on that list is for the future work is a fully Nixified system, a pure Nix-based Linux system, tentatively called NixOS. So that one actually happened. So that's very good. I actually went through the others on the list, and this was really the only one that happened. There's still some work to do. Actually, some of these things I've totally forgotten what they are. Feature selection, automatic instantiation, no ID. This one was LISE, a language for builders. So there was something in there about how Bash is a horrible programming language and we need something better. Gweeks has that. Just need to give a shout out to them. The intentional model, I'll get back to that, but all the other stuff, type system and so on, don't see that happening anytime soon. But who knows? Maybe somebody wants to do a PhD on that. All right, so here are just a few things that I think are interesting for Nix and that I'm interested in working on. So this is by no means a definitive list, so this is why I'm interested in what you all have to say. A new command line interface, distributed or peer-to-peer binary caches, and a content address Nix store, which is a nicer name for the intentional model. This is 3.0, so at the current rate our versions are going, this is probably in 2030 or so. All right. So this is something that I think we should be able to do in the near future. A new command line interface. So the current one is pretty crafty. We have all these separate commands, and a lot of them have names that don't make sense, like Nix instantiate. Nobody understands what that means. So what does it instantiate, and why should you care? It's unclear why some things are commands and other are operations in commands. So, for instance, there's Nix collect garbage, but there's also Nix store --gc, and they do sort of the same thing, but not quite. So there are a lot of suboptimal design choices, like Nix env uses package names, which is slow. So if you say Nix env-i Firefox, it has to evaluate basically all of Nix packages to figure out which one of those packages is Firefox. So this is why most people will say Nix env-ia, capital letter, Firefox. So then it will only look at the Firefox attribute. So it will only evaluate the thing that is necessary. Another issue, which is kind of in the interaction between Nix and Nix packages, is that Nix packages, a lot of packages have options, and there are also a bunch of global options, but they have absolutely no discoverability, unlike, say, the NixOS module system, where options are automatically show up in the manual, so you can find out about them. But all these this Nix packages configurability is you have to know that you can pass a particular option or do an override or whatever. So we have a system, a purely functional system with functions that you can pass arguments. But if users don't know how you can pass an argument or that these arguments exist, it's not very useful. So And NixEnv only does imperative package management, so NixEnv actions are things like install, upgrade, but this is in contrast to the NixOS style of upgrading, where you have a declarative specification. I want a system with these packages taken from the most recent or version of Nix packages, and then when you do an upgrade, everything gets rebuilt. So clearly the NixEnv style also has advantages. So for instance, I don't want all of OpenOffice to be re-downloaded every time I install some package. But clearly there's also a value in having the declarative style. So the solution is to replace it by a single Git style command, so a command called Nix, with lots of subcommands like Nix install, Nix GC, Nix shell, etc. So this would presumably be based on attribute names by default. So you could say Nix install xorg.xmessage or Python packages dot whatever, so it would be fast. And presumably it would also remember those attribute names. And so then later when you do an upgrade, it would use the attribute name to do the upgrade. But the semantics here are not entirely clear yet. I mean, if you installed Firefox Unstable, it doesn't actually exist, but imagine we had something like that. It's unclear whether doing Nix upgrade should upgrade to the latest Firefox Unstable or to the latest Firefox, and what happens if Firefox Unstable gets removed. So there are some issues to figure out there. Another thing that lots of people have demanded over the years is caching of searches. So Nix-QA, Nix-Env-QA is pretty slow. If you're not on an SSD drive, this is also the reason why I say maybe. I've never really been in favor of implementing caching because, what's the saying? There are two hard problems in computing, naming and cache coherence. So, sorry. Yeah, right. making sure, especially given that you can pass options to Nix packages that might influence the result of the evaluation, that makes the caching kind of tricky to do. My advice would be to get an SSD drive, which is always good advice, but especially for Nix. So maybe also support a declarative style where you would have a Nix rebuild command that basically works analogously to NixOS rebuild, and maybe deprecate channels, or more precise, the Nix channel command, because we don't really need it anymore now that you have, you could say, Nix path is, Nix packages is, and then the URL of the channel you want to track. Because if you do this, NixEnv will automatically download the latest version of the channel. So you don't need to run Nix channel dash update anymore. So there are lots of other things that can be fixed here. So I think there is an issue somewhere where people are throwing around IDs for this. We just need to come up with something nice. So the Nix packages discoverability. That's a tricky problem. So we need some sort of new package formalism than something better than what we currently have. So the style where a package is a function where we mix both the dependencies and the sort of the feature arguments like enable pulse audio. So NixEnv has no idea to see that some of these things are options that you might want to show to the user, and others are just dependencies that are generally not interesting to show. So maybe we need something, a function like make package that separates the dependencies from the sort of the option, sort of the user visible options, something like that. So I don't really have an idea how to do that. I think we do need something like that. So the distributed binary cache or the peer-to-peer cache. So this would be this is also something that people have wanted for a long time. So maybe this would even allow us to get rid of having a big Hydra build farm. So basically, people could just build stuff, upload it somewhere, and maybe even publish it via IPFS. And then if enough people have built a certain package and it had the same build result, then you can trust it. So obviously, this is risky. Huh? What do you do if there are sufficiently number of bad people who are publishing Trojans? This is really something of a research issue. But the idea would be that you would only download a binary from a binary cache if a specific binary has at least n signatures, something like that. So this does require greater build determinism than we have currently. So Nix has always been about reproducibility of builds, but not about bitwise exact reproducibility. So for instance, things like timestamps do end up in builds. That breaks this whole thing, because if different people are building a package and they end up with slightly different binaries, had then also put different signatures on that, so you'll never reach the required number of signatures. So that's why we want exact reproducibility, which is a hot topic at the moment. So, for instance, I think Debian got a few hundred thousand dollars from the Linux Foundation to work on improving build determinism. So hopefully things will come out of that that we can use as well. So another thing is the content addressed Nix store, also known as the intentional model. So that's really the only way, the only reason you need to care about is that it allows any user to install packages from any binary cache without having to be root. So right now, with Nix, with the Nix daemon, users can install packages from source, or they can install binaries as long as that binary cache is trusted by root. So you cannot just point at an arbitrary binary cache and pull binaries from there. And the reason is that Nix has to trust that a particular output corresponds to a particular derivation. So if I type Nix env-firefox, it has to trust that a particular binary in the cache is actually the result of building Firefox and not the result of building Firefox and inserting a Trojan horse in there. So, or just replacing it with a script that formats your hard drive. So if you had a content address Nix store, then basically you don't need that kind of trust anymore. Any user can do anything. So that would be very nice. All right, so that was for Nix. So how about NixOS? Well, a few things. So there are the standard things like systemd update, which has been languishing for a while, but finally we have systemd 227 about to hit master. There are other things we should do, like GCC5. But the main thing that I think is very important is closure size reduction. It's kind of a strategic goal, I think. Because right now NixOS is kind of fat. So, for instance, the configuration, the system closure of my laptop is something like 3 gigabytes. Now, I don't really care about that because my laptop has plenty of disk space and it has generally a fast internet connection. But for things like containers and cloud deployments, you really want the closure to be as small as possible. Because, for instance, if we use NixOps to deploy a gazillion EC2 instances, we have to upload or at least part of the system closure to each of those machines. So the smaller that closure is, the better. Now, the reason why NixOS is rather big is that, unlike other distributions, our packages are generally not split into sub-packages like, the binaries, the headers, the static libraries, stuff like that. So Nix has a feature for that called multiple outputs. So there you can have a derivation with multiple, that produces multiple store paths. And then, for instance, you can put the documentation, which nobody cares about because you just Google it, into a separate output and headers in a separate output. So that they don't end up in the system closure. Now, actually, this has been going on for a long time. So already something like 3 years ago, I had a basic prototype for that reduced closures a lot. So things like, what was it, the PAN newsreader had closure reduction from 400 megabytes to 100 megabytes or so. So it was really a lot. But it never made it into master. So Vladimir has been working a lot on this. So hopefully we can get some of this soon. We should probably stop doing these things in separate branches because that tends to diverge a lot. And especially, so it would probably be better to do these things in small steps and quickly merge them into master. But this is always a hard problem, how to handle these kinds of branches. So some Hydra improvements that we really need. So right now, like I said, we really have a bottleneck because we have a central Hydra machine which has something like 3 terabytes of disk space, which we're on the verge of definitively running out of. So this week we had some disk full and I couldn't figure out how to clear up some disk space. So I was deleting some old job sets, but it's also really slow. So this machine, so everything that Hydra does, every package that it builds, so it builds them on separate machines, but it all has to go through this central machine. So which has a really slow RAID something disk. So very often the load on this machine goes to something like 100 because you have 100 processes blocked on doing IO. So that's terrible. So the next thing I want to do about the Hydra Q runner is to have builds directly uploaded to the binary cache. So they don't have to be stored on the local Nix store of this central machine. So this would also be nice for users directly because you don't have to wait until the contents of this machine gets mirrored into cache.nixos.org. So things would end up in cache.nixos.org directly. So as soon as Hi-Res builds something, your builds get faster. And of course we have unlimited disk space on EC2. And the other thing that we really need is more macOS X machines. And since those are not so easily provisioned, we'll have to figure something out. I mean, there is, we use some company, at LogicBlocks, we use some company in Atlanta, I think, that provides macOS X cloud machines, sort of. So we should plug some in. That's actually my last slide. So that was all I had to say. So I would like to open the floor to whatever crazy ideas or demands you have. So if you think we should do this, we should not do this, then please say so.
So we have 15 to 20 minutes for questions. So go wild.
It's probably a very bad idea, but for build determinism, why not have an external signature and an internal signature?
What does that mean?
Though, for instance, you change some file which has a timestamp. You know it doesn't influence the external behavior of your program.
Right, but how do you know it doesn't influence it? I mean, that's always, so for instance, take something like a timestamp. So generally, it doesn't influence it, but Nix doesn't know anything about, well, for instance, you might have an output like a .a file, which has a timestamp or timestamps embedded in it. Nix doesn't know anything about .a file, so it doesn't know that those timestamps don't matter. All it sees is a lot of bytes. And it cannot distinguish between good differences and bad differences.
Except if it was supported and being declared as such. Have you ever thought about that?
Oh, so you would declare in the derivation, like, these kinds of changes don't matter, something like that. Yeah, if you had some... But it would have to be a pretty powerful way. I mean, for instance, specifying that timestamps in a .a don't matter. How would you specify that? What kind of formalism? Would you have something to declare that certain patterns in binaries don't matter? That kind of situation, it's better to just fix the package so that it generates deterministic .a files. Right, if you can, yeah. Well, so some of these things are easy, like the .a files. So it turns out that I think nowadays there is an option to make them deterministic. I think we're even using that. But then there are things like, for instance, the GCC profiled build. So when you compile GCC, it does a profile run, and so the result of that is very timing sensitive. So the GCC you get might be influenced very slightly by timings at build time. And yeah, there's no way you can specify that this binary is equivalent to that binary. I guess, yeah, that's just too hard.
This is just a kind of idea or suggestion. We use Nix a lot in production right now, mm-hmm. The company I'm at, which is the Allen Institute of Artificial Intelligence in Seattle. And one thing we've run into in introducing Nix to new people, we've got a lot of Nix expressions. We use them to manage data sets, all sorts of stuff. But when new people come, the error messages a lot of times that we get from the parser or the expressions can be very cryptic. I think as far as adaptability, that's one of the core issues we run into, and like when we have new team members we're teaching it to, is small little errors, you know, in you forget a semicolon somewhere or you don't, you know, close a string can result in just the absolutely, you know, very disconnected error messages. So that would just be one thing I think from an adaptability perspective we need to improve is just error messages.
You know, yeah.
As simple as that is.
You know. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of a hard problem. So actually, what you mentioned, so syntax errors, in my experience, are not too bad because they're kind of localized. It will tell you there's a parse error at that point. The really hard problem is if you have, say, in an XOS configuration, you have some type error, basically, and you get a giant stack trace, and you have no idea where this comes from and what causes it. Yeah, and it's also not even clear whether, for instance, a giant stack trace is actually helpful because it's just all that garbage vomited over your screen generally just scares people away.
Yeah, a lot of them are really good. Like, a lot of their messages are really good. And it's just in rare cases you run into, like,
switching some
bugs.
You know? Yeah, I think, yeah, whenever you have a weird case like that, yeah, make a bug, yeah.
Hi. Two things. First, on you needing more macOS and builders, have you considered, or maybe this isn't possible, but just virtualization, like starting some Linux and starting macOS virtualized and building inside that you didn't need hardware then?
I think we've sort of thought about it, but yeah, there's always kind of the legal issue that you're not allowed to virtualize Mac OS X, or
I didn't know that.
So people, you can do it, but it's not really legal.
I cannot confirm nor deny.
Right. So then we.
Okay. Just second thing on the previous slide, you said you had the idea of caching the names for Nick's search. What came up in my mind there is just that you really need a different representation of the data structures, like a reverse index, to do a faster search, to find these things. Caching didn't really make sense to me there.
I think the cache is just, well, it's just a cache, so it stores the list of packages, attributes, versions, descriptions, all the metadata to make Nick's env or Nick's queries faster. So if you then do Nick's install, or actually if you do Nick's search Firefox or something like that, it would be able to very quickly search the metadata. But of course, this whole caching stuff becomes a lot less important if we're installing by attribute name by default, so it might actually be that nobody cares anymore about caching once we do that.
Hello, a quick practical question. You said we should define multiple outputs for the package to make the closure smaller. If I, for example, GNU TLS has the default out and a man output defined, and when I look into the in Nick's REPL, I see GNU TLS dot all dot standard env dot system dot type dot man and dot out somewhere in between all those. So discoverability with that, can we improve that?
Right. So there should also be a dot output.
Okay.
Which is the list of outputs.
So
the actual outputs. So if you define an attribute, outputs is dev, man, doc, whatever, that causes outputs with those names to be added. So you get attributes with those names, but there's also the dot outputs attribute. Okay. So, but there are still a lot of issues to be figured out there. So, for instance, Nick's env or Nick's. So, what output should it install by default?
Yeah, that's not really out at the moment, right?
I'm actually not sure whether
first it, in the list.
Yeah, I think it does the first. Yeah, so you don't get the man pages, which you probably do want.
It installs all.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay, so that. Right.
So for the camera, it installs all outputs. And the general question, do you think it's still possible to put a type system over Nick's expressions? What's your take on that?
That would be really hard. Because it's not even clear what the types would be. So there actually once was a Andres Loy wrote a grant proposal for a research project, and I don't remember the exact details. But so I assume he had some thoughts about what the type system would look like. But I assume that just doing basic Hindley-Milner or something like that would not work because, yeah, it's basically attribute sets or records. So, and there are type systems for record types, but it's also sort of slapping a type system onto a language that didn't have a static type system. I mean, we do lots of sort of dirty things that are probably not typable. Yeah. But it would be really nice. That's
One thing I'd be curious about is just the relationship of Nix to containers and where what the future looks like for that. Not that it necessarily needs to be formalized or not that we need to have one, but from a marketing to new users perspective, where Nix sits into relation of that or features that or ways that we can improve that ecosystem. I'm just curious.
You said containers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually kind of skipped over that. So I had something there about improved container supports, but because my thoughts are not very concrete, I sort of skipped that. So I think... So certainly we can do a lot better at, for instance, using NixRest to build containers like Docker images, because Nix or NixRest are very suited for that. It doesn't necessarily have to be NixRest, but since you have all that stuff anyway, you might as well, like the module system, you might as well use it. But I'm also been thinking about, so for instance, systemd provides a lot of sort of container-like features. You can run a service inside a change route or inside an environment where it only has access to a few bind mounts. And that's actually quite convenient. So rather than having sort of full containers, you just define subsets of the file system. So for instance, you could say the Postgres service only needs access to /data/Postgres and to, only the subset of the Nix store, namely the closure of Postgres in the Nix store. So those are the only paths it needs. So that's basically a sort of container. And then you could have things like, using a tool like NixOps to migrate the contents of a container to a different machine, because you know that the only things that Postgres can access are the things in those directories. So then you really have sort of a handle on what makes up a service /container. There are all sorts of really cool things that could be done there. I don't know how to do yet.
Yeah, so I'm actually curious about the portability of Nix to other platforms besides Linux and Mac OS X. So for me, for example, I also do Windows development sometimes. For me, it would be great that we can also use Nix properly on Cygwin. But the problem is, of course, we need manpower to maintain the portability of Nix for Cygwin. And also we need to make some changes to Nix packages. So, for example, that the standard environment works properly. I think there are some improvements possible there. So for me, touching the standard environment, I know how to bootstrap a Linux system, but still I find it a bit scary. And I think, there are some things we can do to improve that. Do you also have some ideas on that?
Not me specifically, but Road Code, or is Rock, where is he? Do you have something about how the Cygwin or Windows stuff is going along?
Yeah, so it works if you sweat a lot and look long enough. It's kind of works a lot of impurity, but once you have this base image of Cygwin, at least from the last time, when was the last snapshot we'd taken the branch? Probably like in June, July. So from June, July, Nix packages, they work, but then depends which package you want. I don't know, Python works, OpenLDAP works. Like quite a lot, but there are just like some, you just need to spend a bit of time. It's not about manpower, because nobody wants to work on Cygwin. It's more about, it's true. But it's more about, companies wanting it. That if they have the deployment and you want to deploy on Windows, it's possible. It just costs a bit more, which is equals manpower.
And of course, it will bit rot, quite a lot. I mean, it used to work at some point in the past, and then it for a long time it didn't, and then you did stuff, and so now it should be in a workable state again. But of course, unless we have a Cygwin machine in the build farm, it will probably sort of oscillate between working and not working.
We have 5 more minutes for questions, so.
I've seen your email recently about Hydra that is not officially supported. I would like to ask if it would be possible at least document somewhere what commit works. And how to achieve some working configuration.
Right.
Because it's one of the parts of the NixOS stuff that really brings people in, I think. And it's very hard to find a commit and configuration so that it actually works.
So the most recent one should work. The problem is if you're upgrading, because, I mean, it might break your existing installation because there are schema changes and sometimes the default locations change and or it might require some other configuration changes. So that's really the problem. But the current revision is what hydra.nixos.org runs. So that should work. So the deeper question here is that we should really do Hydra stable releases, I guess. That's that would be obviously the best thing to do, but it's kind of a manpower issue. It takes time to do releases and write release notes, and and I don't really have that at the moment. So.
Yeah, my take on this is if you get someone to be like the release manager to spend some time helping, you know, go through the commits and form a changelog and all that, shouldn't be too much investment. And if we get someone to take care of that, I'm sure that we'll get momentum and you know, more people interested. So I think it's, yeah, just if somebody volunteers basically to manage releases, that will push this forward.
Hello. Couple notes. When you're talking about upgrading the Nix CLI, I'm over here. You might want to take an example from like the FreeBSD PKG. It's
from
almost doing
what?
The same thing. Like,
can you say that again?
What? Oh, like the FreeBSD PKG, PKGNG,
okay.
Which is you have a PKG search, PKG upgrade, PKG audit, PKG install. It's almost like Nix search, Nix. With kind of the helping with Cygwin stuff, I think you can run Cygwin under Wine, so you could probably put that into a test for Hydra. Speaking of Hydra, Hydra is incredibly useful, but it is kind of, it takes a bit getting used to. So if you have questions about this, I think the IRC channel is a good place to ask. I have done the Hydra setup before, and I try to help people, but I can understand the lack in manpower in creating official releases for something that's kind of a development tool type thing. So, and one last thing, for containers, some of the people I work with released something called Clear Linux containers that use hardware support and new support in the Linux kernels, and they can deploy containers in about 150 milliseconds for spawning off a new system. So there's some really neat technology going on in there that's coming out of the open source technology group at Intel.
Yeah, somebody was also talking about unikernels.
Okay, so we've run out of time. Thank you very much, Eko, for your talk.
You.